volunteers can really be helpful in getting someone to again have hope, because that's the other thing. We might be able to give shelter, we might be able to give food, we might be able to give financial assistance, but it's really hope that is the product that we really feel is the most important thing that we can deliver.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Barnaby, and I am the regional CEO for the American Red Cross Greater New York. And welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Mary, I am so delighted to have you back on the show. You were one of my first guests. It was pre-pandemic, and at that time, you were the CEO of the Girl Scouts of Connecticut. You joined the Red Cross and started that journey there at a time which I'd say we were in the throes of the pandemic. It was September of 2020. What a time to join. One of the things that I wanted to mention is the fact that both of those organizations are over 100 years old, and they were both started by women. And the Girl Scouts was started by Juliet Gordon Lowe in 1912. She was 52. And the American Red Cross was started in 1881 by Clara Barton. And I love one of the quotes from her, which is, "You must never think of anything except the need and how to meet it," which is what the Red Cross does. Tell me, you were, you know, the Girl Scouts was thriving. I know you loved the girls during your tenure there. What was it about moving on? Because it's a huge move, especially during that time, to the Red Cross.
Yeah, Sylvia, thanks so much. And thank you for talking about two of my absolute sheroes, because both Juliet Gordon Lowe and Clara Barton are really two of the reasons why I am here where I am right now, because, and you mentioned that they both started these amazing organizations when they were older. They were, you know, they were middle-aged. And that was part of it for me too, when I was offered this opportunity to leave the Girl Scouts to go to work for the American Red Cross. I thought, well, you know, is it too late? Should I kind of not push my boundaries forward? And then I thought, gosh, what advice would I give to a girl? And I would say to a girl, of course you have to push your boundaries. And of course you have to, you know, stretch yourself. And so that's what made me think about, yeah, okay. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm not a young thing anymore, but I really want to continue to make the world a better place. And I felt that that was really what the Red Cross does every single day. It makes the world a better place. And I just had to follow that pull.
And as you said, I mean, that's such an example for women who think that, you know, they're afraid of moving into another direction or doing something a little bit different because of a number attached to how old they might be. And we have to remember that back in 1881, when Clara Barton was, I believe I said 48 years old, that was
It's not like 48 is the new 30. back in those days, 48 was like the 60, because we didn't live as long. And, you know, and so even for a woman of that age to push forward and try to do something. And I mean, she not only went out and did the work of the Red Cross herself by being on the battlefields during the Civil War, but she also lobbied and pushed Congress to charter the American Red Cross, which, you know, that was no mean feat. I mean, that was, she got, you know, the Congress to vote to charter this organization that has been around for 141 years. So, I mean, that takes so much spunk and so much chutzpah. And you're right, you know, it was a very different time. And I don't know if any of your listeners and viewers watch The Gilded Age, but it's a mini series on TV. And it's all about the, you know, the kind of the aristocracy of New York around the time of, I guess, the Vanderbilts. And but Clara Barton and the Red Cross feature very, very, very prominently in the early episodes of that series because she's out there raising money for this organization that she wants to create and with her vision. And it's really makes us all so proud to see what a great fundraiser she was, as well as being, you know, this visionary about what she wanted to see happen so that she could alleviate suffering for people that have maybe faced one of the worst days of their lives.
And that's one of the things that people don't really know about the Red Cross, not only how it was founded, but the fact that it is totally based on volunteers and donations. And, you know, I read a little prior to the First World War, the Red Cross introduced its first aid, water safety, and public health nursing programs. And then with the outbreak of the war, the organization experienced a phenomenal growth. The number of local chapters jumped from 107 in 1914 to 3,864 in 1918. And membership grew from 17,000 to over 20 million adult and 11 million junior Red Cross members. I mean, that's huge. So tell us, you know, the Red Cross now with the volunteers and it helps people affected by disasters. It has blood drives. It's also an international organization. What do you see as some of the most unknown facts that the Red Cross does that people really wouldn't associate it with?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned blood collection, which of course everyone's familiar with, and also disasters when we respond to natural and man-made disasters. We also do the training. You know, so many of you may have had life CPR training or life-saving training. But the one thing that I didn't really focus on, even as I was interviewing for this job, was the work we do with the military. I mean, it's a big piece of the support that the Red Cross provides to members of the military and their families, which includes both veterans as well as people who are active in the military right now. And so one of the things, for example, if there's a life event here in the U.S. and a family member wants to get in touch with their loved one who might be on active duty in a war zone, for example, the Red Cross will work with the local State Department and others on the ground to try to locate that family member and actually help get them back home. So a story that I heard recently was I was actually getting a COVID test and talking to the guy giving me the COVID test, and he mentioned that he knew that I worked for the Red Cross. And he said, you know, I love the Red Cross. He said, when my mother passed away, they found my brother in Iraq and got him home. And when you hear a story like that, you realize how it's not small. It's so big to the person that received that support. But for the Red Cross, it's happening, you know, every single day all over the world, really. And, you know, and so that's the kind of thing that a lot of people don't realize, the support that we give. And even we do casework with families of the military. So, you know, if someone's back and they're looking for services, you know, we help them to locate ways that they can, you know, move on with their lives, and even if it's they need financial assistance to help them get a little bit started in their lives, or pay rent, or whatever it might be. So the Red Cross is really, really there. And then for veterans, you know, going out to veterans hospitals and being there to support the people that are that have been impacted by their service, and, you know, in some way their physical or mental health. I mean, another thing, as I mentioned, mental health that the Red Cross says that people don't think about is, you know, when someone experiences a terrible event like a fire where there's, you know, they lose everything or there's a fatality, we provide a lot of mental health services through our volunteers. So we actually have volunteers who are, many of them, most of them or all of them are trained social workers or psychologists, and they're volunteers, and they will go out to an area where there might be a disaster, and just be there to give spiritual and emotional help to the people that have been affected. And, you know, with COVID happening and, you know, imagine you're lost your job, you know, COVID's raging and your house burns down. I mean, you know, how much trauma can you take? And that's where our mental health volunteers can really be helpful in getting someone to again have hope, because that's the other thing. We might be able to give shelter, we might be able to give food, we might be able to give financial assistance, but it's really hope that is the product that we really feel is the most important thing that we can deliver.
Well, it is, especially in today's age. It's been forever, but when I say especially in today's age, with everything that we have actually gone through with the pandemic these last 2 years, with what's happening in, you know, overseas, with what's happening in Ukraine, with all of the natural disasters that have been taking place, due to climate change and so on, mental health services are huge, and people don't know where to go to, you know, to get them, because they're few and far between. Because most people think of it as something that has to be on their insurance. Does, you know, Medicare cover it? Does Medicaid cover it? Do their insurance companies cover it? And here you're talking about helping people who are going through traumas, and hope is huge. It's a great four-letter word.
It really, really is. Yeah.
So your area is the greater New York, plus, as you tell me, Greenwich, Connecticut. What is one of the biggest needs that you see in the area that most people, again, wouldn't think happens as often as it does?
Well, you know, just kind of on a day-to-day basis, you know, we hear about all the big things, like, of course, Hurricane Ida, which affected our region so much back in September. And then, you know, we know about Hurricane Sandy and 9/11 and all those major things that affected our communities. But I think that we don't sometimes realize that every day here in the greater New York area, which covers, from my perspective, covers Long Island, the five boroughs, Rockland and Westchester, and then Greenwich, Connecticut, that there are probably in some days 5 to 7 fires, home fires a day. And home fires are probably a larger cause of death than so many other things that we imagine might be ahead of it in terms of causing fatalities. And so I think that that's the kind of thing that we see here every single day. And some of them are ones where people lose everything. Some of them are just people being displaced from their homes for a few days. So I think that is something that we often, it's not visible to us. But underneath all of that, I think there's something also very important. And that is, a lot of this can happen in very vulnerable communities. We think about the most vulnerable communities, that where people may not have the financial resources, they may not have the language skill. I shouldn't say language skills, because English is not their first language. It doesn't mean they don't have good skills in their own language. But I think it's important that there might be this net sense of not feeling trust when an organization comes in to provide help, you know, especially if it's an undocumented person. So what's really important for people to know is that the Red Cross helps everybody, no questions asked. And I think that that's really an important thing for people to know, so that we do try to, you know, even with our own volunteers, we try to make sure that they have cultural competency, that they understand, that they speak. There are 60 languages spoken in that we know of in the New York area that we even know of, and to really make sure that we have volunteers as well as tools and resources, so that if we are working with someone who doesn't speak English as a first language, or maybe is an immigrant to this country, that we can really give them the level of trust and confidence so that they will allow us to help them and not be afraid to ask. So I think that's another really big thing, and just making sure that the people that we have on board as volunteers and staff represent the communities that we're serving in the greater New York area.
What is the greatest percentage of volunteers that you have? Where do they come from? Is there a wide range? Well, as you said, you know, we know now that there's a wide range of languages and cultures, but how do you go about getting these volunteers?
Oh, it's a great question, Sylvia. So we have a bunch of volunteers that came to us in 2001 because they experienced 9/11 and they wanted to do something. So a big event like that, where you find New Yorkers saying, greater New Yorkers saying, I want to help, I want to do something. So we have a whole cohort of volunteers, many of them who have been helping us for 20 years, you know, just because they came forth after 9/11. Same thing with Hurricane Sandy that happened, I think that was going to be 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, spurs a lot of volunteers. But with that said, throughout the years, we are always looking to build our base of volunteers. So right now in the greater New York area, we have probably around 4,500 volunteers. And ironically, about half of them are youth volunteers. So in high schools and colleges, there are youth Red Cross clubs. And these are young people that, you know, that take up the mission of the Red Cross, and they volunteer in many, many different ways, age appropriately. We don't like send them on the front lines or anything. They do a lot of wonderful things in terms of projects and fundraising and things that they do to help the organization. For example, at a blood drive, they may show up and just be the people that do welcoming and intake of the people coming in and helping them get, you know, their snack after, but just being part of this bigger thing that that they want to be part of. So when you look at the adult volunteers that we have, like I said, many of them have been around for a long time. It's in their DNA to be part of the work of the Red Cross. But with COVID, we really had to do a lot of our volunteer work virtually. I mean, the one thing that we love in the Red Cross is we're huggers. We love to put our arm around somebody when they're having a tough day. But of course, with COVID, we had to really step back and look out for the safety of the people that we were helping and responding to, as well as our own workforce. And when we say workforce, we mean volunteers and paid staff as well. And so we found that some of our older volunteers weren't able to actually come out because of safety reasons. And so we had to train some newer volunteers in doing work virtually. So if you were, let's say you were impacted by a home fire, we would be able to be on the scene to give you information, but then we would then, you know, do follow-up with you virtually, you know, helping you to find resources. You normally could come into our offices and we would help you find, recovery resources, but we were doing all of that remotely. If we were putting you up in a hotel because we didn't put people in congregate shelters because of COVID, we could arrive at the hotel and give you financial assistance and information, but then you would then do your follow-up with us virtually. So we're looking at different ways we can bring volunteers into the fold, because not everybody, you know, has the time that maybe some of the retired folks do, and looking at ways we can bring people in more episodically and also project-based type volunteers, because a lot of people really want to do work. So for example, we might work with one of our corporate partners might want to put a team together, and we will go into a community where, especially an underserved community, and we'll install free smoke detectors and do training with the households that we install in on fire safety. So that's a way somebody can come out maybe once or twice a year, help us with installing the smoke detectors, and feel good about doing something that really does save lives. So that's another way we engage people for something like the installation of smoke detectors. We call that our home fire campaign. And so we really are looking at ways we can be more flexible in terms of how we engage volunteers so that they can meet them where they are. We have a lot of training. It used to be you had to do that in person, and now a lot of it, most of it, in fact, virtually almost all of it can be done virtually. And so that's really been a big help. So if you signed up as a volunteer tomorrow, you could just go right online and figure out, depending on the the job you want, because we actually have job descriptions for all of our volunteer roles. And you could be a volunteer if you didn't want to be a volunteer in disaster response. You could be a volunteer in our fundraising department or in our communications department. So we have very broad opportunities for people who want to, and people that were, you know, out of work during COVID, a lot of them came and joined us so they could keep their skills going. So that they, you know, if they were a communications professional, for example, they would work with our communications department, and then they would have that on their resume and broaden their skills until they could really become employed again. So we had a lot of servers when the restaurants were closed who came in and wanted to help with our mass feeding operations when we would go into an area that was affected by a terrible disaster and actually help to feed those folks.
And that's something that I know I would never have thought of, is the fact, as you said, you actually have job descriptions, and due to COVID, you had to be able to adapt very quickly, I'm sure, and figure out how to do everything virtually. For so many people who did lose their jobs due to COVID, and that is one way to really keep up with the technology and the knowledge and be able to be doing something that feels good, and also being able to fill some of the gaps on your resume, being able to continue in whatever industry you were in, whatever career path, and maybe find new ones that you never thought of.
You know, we have a big fundraising event coming up, in fact, this week, and we have a couple of young people that are actually looking to be in the, you know, and have careers in hotel and hospitality management, who have been working with us to help us with our event. And, you know, they're getting some skills from that and also making connections in the network and networking. And it's been great for us too. So yeah, you know, so if it's something you want to do better or learn more about, you can do that. If it's something that has nothing to do with your day job and it's something you want to do just to have a different, like we have actually volunteers, if you've seen our emergency vehicles that, you know, arrive on the scene, they're these big, they almost like ambulance, like we call them ERVs, emergency response vehicles. We have like little 90 pound grandmas driving because that's what they want to do and they're trained to do, and, you know, watch out. So it really is a way for people to fulfill, you know, a need they have in themselves, you know, to do something and to make a difference.
So the Red Cross is much more of an organization than most people can even think of. We, you know, see the big Red Cross. We know what the logo looks like. We think of the Red Cross going into disasters, but who would even connect the Red Cross with growth in a person?
Yeah. And I think that's the magic of volunteering. I think people who are volunteers, not just in our organization, but in other organizations, they realize that it does fill something inside themselves. And I think that is, you know, and it's priceless. You can't put a number on that. It's just something that really makes you feel good. And also, I think too, the bonds and the relationships that you build too, sometimes in those situations, we have some of our long-term volunteers are like family to each other. It's really, a beautiful thing to see.
Is there any particular area where right now, in today's, you know, day, right now, you need volunteers more than another area?
Yeah, I think we can always use volunteers to do, to be a part of our disaster action teams. So we actually have 24/7, we have different 8-hour shifts where volunteers who are trained will come in and they will, what we call, work a shift. And that means that they will be usually on site in one of our facilities. We have a headquarters on Long Island, we have New York City, and then we also have one in Greenwich. And they will report in where all of our vehicles are. And then if a like, for example, in New York City, if the FDNY fire department calls us and says, hey, there's a big blaze, you know, in Queens in this location, we want you guys on the scene, our DAC team will jump in one of our vehicles, drive out to the scene and be ready to help. And if they need more help, they'll radio in for more help to help the people that are being evacuated from that building where there is either a flood or a fire or some other thing that's making it necessary for them to evacuate. And that includes everything from getting them shelter to giving them food, giving them financial assistance, and then really, again, signing them up for recovery type casework services after they've, you know, kind of gotten through the first couple of days of the, you know, the disaster. Also mental health. Let's say you had left your medication inside the apartment that's burning. We will get you, we will replace your medication so that you have that. If someone needs a walker, you know, whatever it is, we will make sure that in those hours, those 48 hours right after this disaster, that we're getting you your immediate needs met. And then we'll work with you to try to help you determine what you can do going forward. So those types of responders, we call them DAC responders, disaster action team. Those are always, you know, in great need for us. But then we have people we want to train to be shelter, work in our shelters. We had with Hurricane Ida, we had opened a few shelters around in the region. The first night, for example, the one in Mamaroneck, New York, had something like 120 people there. They were mostly people that were pulled off the road on I-95 because of the flooding and they couldn't get home. So, you know, that we have people trained to be in those shelters to help the people that come in. And we have people that are trained to feed and, you know, and we have to be very aware when we're doing feeding of, you know, people's cultural, physical, restrictions. So, you know, if we're in a community where, for example, they need kosher food, we need to make sure that we're bringing food in that really can be, you know, is appropriate for the people that we're serving. So there's all of those types of response jobs are the ones that are really most needed. In some of our areas, we don't collect blood anymore in New York City. Red Cross doesn't. We do in Westchester and Rockland and Greenwich. And we're always looking for people to be volunteers, to be ambassadors, you know, when people come in to give blood, to help check them in and make them, you know, get them calm so they're not afraid and that, you know, making sure that they get through the process okay. So those are some of the areas. But then again, you know, our fundraising department is always looking for people that, you know, might want to be do peripheral types of jobs and help there. Our communications department. Oh, we have a whole bunch of people who are photographers who go out to events as volunteers and take pictures. You know, they're people that are, you know, skilled at photography, and they may even be professionals, and they come in and volunteer for us. So those are really some of the, you know, the different ways that people can volunteer with us. We have very, very elaborate structures. We, you know, we even have titles. You're my volunteer lead partner, and they have titles of manager. And it really is a very amazing way for people. And then board members, you know, those are volunteers as well. We have individuals who are, you know, accomplished professionals who business people very often, but not always, who want to be on our boards. So, so we have something for everybody.
So the Red Cross is more than just the logo and what people think. Mary, where can people find out more information about the Red Cross? And also, you know, if they're interested in volunteering and seeing what you have.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to mention one more quick thing too that I wanted to mention too, Sylvia, before I give you that information, and that is climate change. One of the things that we have been really monitoring and focusing on over the years is how has climate change impacted our work and our capacity? Because, for example, 3 years ago, we would maybe have, you know, in one period of time, we would have one major disaster. And now in that same period of time, we're having three. And it's kind of chronically, we say it's chronic now because it's not just episodic. It's happening like, and if you look at certain communities around the country as well, like, you know, places like Louisiana, the Gulf, they're getting hit, the wildfires, you know, it's chronic. So the Red Cross right now is really looking to understand the impact that climate is having on our resource and capacity needs so that we can be better prepared, not only in the future to respond, but also to prepare and make people in those communities more resilient. So that's something that's really exciting that's happening. And I know some people, you know, younger people and older people as well, many of them are interested in climate change. And so that's another area where, you know, as we develop more of our programs and understand, we know the why, but now we're working on the what. You know, what is it that we need to do to really respond to this? Because we know it's impacting us. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned.
No, I'm very happy you did, because we did sort of mention it in briefly before. It's huge. I mean, it is impacting and will continue to impact us for a very long time.
Yeah. So how do we help these folks, you know, build more resilient communities maybe before the next disaster so that they can have an easier time adapting? So more on that, but that's really an important area for us. So we welcome everybody to volunteer for us, and go to our website. And I think, you know, very important, you said it so well earlier when you said that we rely on the real energy and efforts of our volunteers and the generosity of our donors. That is how our organization, 90% of our workforce is volunteer, and 90% of the money that we receive goes directly to the work that we do. So go just to our website, American Red Cross, Greater New York. If you're outside of Greater New York, just go to American Red Cross and you can tell them where you live, and they will tell you where you can volunteer, and you could do everything online. And we will then have someone, a real person, speak to you to find out more about what it is that you're interested in, and then kind of give you the training curriculum that you need to be successful in terms of fulfilling the volunteer role that you want. And you can actually deploy outside of New York. Our volunteers go all over the country for 2-week periods when they volunteer to do it. I myself, a year ago, went down to Texas to work with the unaccompanied minors. We were called in by the Homeland Security to come and to really be there to just provide care and support for the unaccompanied young men who were coming into this country. And that was probably a transformational experience for me. And we also helped with the Afghan travelers who came in recently. And we also do, you know, work with disasters. When the building collapsed in Miami, we were there. When people from New York were there with the Kentucky tornadoes, I think something like 24 people from the New York area went there to help. So it you can deploy pretty much all over the country if you want to, once you've had the training, and you're always obviously here to help us right here in the Greater New York area. So it's pretty unique, the opportunities you could have as a volunteer.
Mary, thank you so much. It's been fascinating, and what an organization. Congratulations on this role. It's been over 2 years now, and the work you're doing is phenomenal.
So thank you, Sylvia. Thanks for finding me. It's so good to see you again.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.